Well, welcome again to a new edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast, the new sound Kings of Anglia podcast. My name is Mark Heath. With me as ever is Andy Warren.
Hey, yo.
There's Andy. Sleep deprived as ever, Andy?
Yep.
How much sleep are you getting at the moment?
Four hours. Which is more than I used to get. I used to watch a lot of American things, which I've knocked on the head now.
But still enjoying being a dad, or have you sort of...
Yeah, loving it.
Yeah?
Not yeah, considered. She smiled at me the other day. Good times.
Outstanding. And also, the man that we just were having a pre-podcast chat emerged that Andy Warren has never seen Back to the Future, which I find totally unbelievable. Because it's on ITV, what, three or four times a week at least?
I think that at least puts me off, if anything.
Really?
Yeah. It's always there, so I know I can always have it if I want it. It's just not happened for me yet.
I'm at a loss for words, because as a cultural reference, Back to the Future is one of the big keys in my life, I'd say. Obviously, as a man of fairly advancing years. Now, anyway, we'll come back to that because I want to introduce our special guest. Over the water from Norwich, we've got Paddy Davitt.
Yeah, good evening, afternoon, good morning. Cover all the bases. I was desperate to get into that Back to the Future conversation, but I thought I'd wait politely being introduced. Have I seen it? Yeah, I feel we're preaching to a non-believer.
Yeah.
There's so many Back to the Future mugs in this office, one of which is on the desk now. I feel like I have seen it, it's just there.
We should say that I'm sitting here with a Back to the Future mug drinking tea out of it as we record this. That's how much of a fan I am. I know, Paddy, you share my fandom, and
huge.
I can't believe that you've never seen it. What other films haven't you seen? Have you seen Star Wars?
Yes.
What else is there? Indiana Jones?
Maybe, not intentionally.
Ferris Bueller?
Yeah, I watched that the other day.
That's a good film. Yeah, that is a great film. Yeah. So you just think Back to the Future is the key kind of part of your cultural knowledge that you...
That's missing. That and Love Island, which is missing. It seems like it's a cultural reference point now. But
that's a good thing in my view.
Absolutely.
It's not for me. It's not popular on our desk.
For the first time, I managed to use mute on Twitter this week to mute any mention of Love Island. So I've no idea what's going on other than it's happening. It appears to be a collection of the worst people on earth that you just chuck on an island and try and get them to have some nookie.
But the relationships don't last. And that is the thing that has shocked me. It set up perfectly for beautiful unions, but they seem to break up when they come off the island.
Shockingly.
It is shocking. It's almost as if it's not true.
It seems like a healthy place to nurture a relationship, doesn't it, that kind of environment? Anyway, Paddy, I should have introduced you properly.
Go on.
We got talking about Back to the Future. You're the group football editor. You've crossed the border from Norwich today for a bunch of meetings because you're a very important and busy man, much like myself.
You kept a straight face when you said that.
Absolutely. I should stress, for the purpose of this podcast, obviously it's Rich Town-based podcast, although he writes about Norwich City as his day job, Paddy is very much a Coventry City man.
We share a love of blue.
Indeed.
Sky blue in my case.
Absolutely. And you saw them win promotion, didn't you, at Wembley recently?
Yeah. I was there Bank Holiday Monday just gone. Yeah, mighty Cov, 37,000 strong, dwarfed little old Exeter, on and off the pitch, 3-1, and now we're back in League One. So the rise has started again. My girlfriend, soon to be wife, has now seen them the other day and 12 months ago in the Chequered Trade Trophy final. She delusionally thinks Cov are there every 12 months and they win and they win a game of football at Wembley. I told her it's not quite like that because prior to the Chequered Trade, it was 30 long years since we were there in 87. I'm sure everybody listening wants to hear a potted history of Coventry City. Hopefully better times ahead.
The good times are back.
Yeah, but it was a great day. I mean, when you haven't had a lot to get excited about to bring it round to town, when you get those type of days, it just makes it all worthwhile because it's like a shared experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have 37,000 fellow Coventrians there, really proud day, but you don't get along to savour it because before they know it, I'll be going to the huge teams of Accrington Stanley.
The powerhouses.
Yeah, exactly.
I've always wondered, actually, for you boys who obviously cover football as a living, when you go to a game like that as a fan, do you still find yourself kind of wanting to tweet about it and make notes, or are you able to just kind of enjoy it as
a
fan?
Definitely not tweet.
Yes,
I quite enjoy not having a laptop in front of
football. So you can still go to a game and enjoy it as a football fan, as opposed to.
No, I don't. I find it quite hard now, actually.
Yeah.
I grew up watching Ipswich, and now I've come back to write about Ipswich, which is a bit of an odd situation. But when I did used to come back and watch Ipswich when I was covering other teams, I felt different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. didn't feel the same. The magic was gone.
Yeah. And you, Paddy, you...
Well, you talked about things. The only thing I had in my hands the other day was a pint of beer. And, and for anybody who didn't actually follow it that closely, the opening goal for Kov came in the 47th minute, just after half time. I was still in the concourse drinking, which is a pretty shameful admission. But and you're not allowed to take the beer back outside. So literally, it was this kind of ripple effect. You know, like when you're watching a game live and then on the TV screens, it will come. It was the same thing. It was a ripple effect. So I knew they'd probably scored. And then it was like 10 seconds later. Bedlam. It was like if England hopefully win the World Cup, beer glasses and pints everywhere.
Yeah.
So then I thought, well, I've come all this way, maybe I should go back outside. But luckily enough, they scored two and three soon after. So I saw two goals live of the three.
Fantastic.
Goals, weren't they?
Yeah, we were bangers, mate. Yeah. On a big occasion like that. Yeah, Mark Robbins, I'll whisper it quietly. He's obviously got Norwich connections, but he's doing a great job there. As I say, two Wembley finals, two wins. So. Yeah, positivity reigns, which is hopefully the case over here, boss.
Absolutely, which brings us nicely on, Paddy. Excellent wow. Segue there.
There you go, boss.
Superb.
You can have that one.
He's a pro, you can tell. To Paul Hurst, obviously, and the reason we're having this podcast, Ipswich Town, of course. Paul Hurst appointed as manager last week. We've not seen anything from him at all.
Nope.
Unveiling next week, Andy, you can bring us up to date on that.
Yeah, well, I think he's probably still in Dubai as we're speaking right now on Friday. But he's back this weekend. Straight on an LMA manager's course in London, but he's been given a day off for good behaviour, and he's going to spend that day off at Portman Road. So hopefully we're all going to get to meet him next Tuesday, and he can spell out his vision.
Absolutely.
In front of us all.
And you'll be able to follow that with us, of course, online and in print and on this podcast. We'll do a little podcast special maybe next Tuesday. He has been having a few words though this week, hasn't he, Paul Hurst, talking about how he wants Ipswich to set up, what he's going to demand in terms of style of play, and it all sounded quite positive.
Yeah, front foot stuff, wants to take the game to the opposition. Doesn't sound like the kind of guy that's going to just match up the opposition, which we've obviously had here before in Mick. It's all very positive what he's saying at the moment. Big strides in sports science, which Paul Hurst used a lot of at Shrewsbury. I think he's going to be able to use a lot of that here at Ipswich. And he's got an equally passionate assistant manager we heard yesterday at Chris Doig, which you can't pronounce.
Doig, yeah.
He is assistant who wants to be a manager himself, but is just as demanding as him. So
yeah,
all sounds pretty positive.
Absolutely. And Paddy, if you don't mind me turning to you now, putting your Norwich City hat on.
Yeah.
What's the view across the border of the man Hurst being appointed at Town? Is there any kind of concern that that's a fine appointment by Town and might push the kind of advantage a bit more towards it?
Yeah, very definitely, mate. Yeah, I mean... you know, you look at it, and I know they were linked to the guy Ross, and obviously Norwich went down that route in terms of went and plucked a basically an unknown in Alec Neil from Hamilton, actually, as it was then. And there was a lot of this, not quite sure how it's going to pan out kind of thing. Is he able to step up to it? And within 6 months of being at Carrow Road, I don't really want to remind you boys, but we had that playoff sort of run.
Gloss over that, yeah.
We, as in the Norwich we, as just to reiterate, I'm a Cov fan. But and it was literally like, this is an unbelievable appointment, a young, hungry, up-and-coming manager. And unfortunately, Premier League was a bit of a step too far at that stage in his career. And obviously, they've gone a different route again now with the appointment of Daniel Farke. But I think it's sort of symptomatic of the way a lot of football is going now. You know, we've had this... It almost felt like a merry-go-round of the Pardews and you know, the Sam Allardyces and that. And I just think clubs now in general are looking for something totally different, something fresh. Guys who have still got their managerial coaching careers ahead of them, and this guy clearly falls into that category. I think there is genuine, you know, we've obviously done a lot of content around the appointment from the Norwich angle and canvassed a lot of opinion from Norwich fans, and I think there is a genuine feeling that this is a guy on the up. And yeah, in terms of the balance of power in this part of the world, I think, yeah, there is a fear because obviously, worth reiterating, Town did finish above Norwich in the table last season, even under Mick. So, yeah, I think the feeling is this could be a very good appointment. Funnily enough, I actually spoke to Paul Warne, who Shrewsbury met in the playoff final as Rotherham manager.
Yeah.
His backstory is actually a Norwich lad. Well, he's a Norwich fan. He's from Norfolk. But he also played with... Hurst at Rotherham, so they went way back, and this was just a day or two, I think, before or maybe the week before it was actually confirmed. So it looked like it was on the cards, didn't it? It was going to be Hurst, and he was eulogising. He said, "This guy is going right to the top. He's a really astute operator. Knows what he wants, as Andy touched on there. Knows how he wants his teams to play." very good, I think, in terms of creative with whatever finance he's got. You know, at Shrewsbury, he actually had two Norwich lads on loan. They had that keeper Henderson, didn't they, from Manchester United. So that tells me that he's very good in terms of you give him a remit and he's not going to spend, he doesn't need necessarily to spend a lot of money to craft a very competitive team. And you know, I think it's safe to say start of the season in League One last season, nobody would have been tipping Shrewsbury to be anywhere near it. So that tells me that, yeah, I think if you're a Norwich fan, you should be worried, yeah, definitely.
He's a bloody nice bloke as well, apparently, isn't he, Andy?
Sounds it, yeah.
Just on that note, that Paddy touched on, obviously, Shrewsbury tipped to be relegation favourites, really, last season in League One. You've penned a bit for the paper tomorrow, haven't you, about how Paul Hurst used that to his advantage, because I find it unbelievable, but apparently Ipswich are among the favourites for relegation next season.
Every single bookie that's offering odds on relegation, Ipswich are in the bottom three.
Yeah.
At this stage, they finished 12th.
That's strange. Yeah.
With the squad as well that they've got.
Exactly. It's a decent squad.
Absolutely.
That's quite a plummet. You know, this is the be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Rhetoric in full effect here that was being peddled by the likes of Mr. Sutton and from north of the border. I think the bookies have caught a bit of be careful what you wish for itis.
And just tell us what Hurst did at Shrewsbury. He used that to his advantage, didn't he?
Yeah, they were predicted to finish 23rd, I think. He pinned that up on the dressing room wall with just "We are rubbish" written underneath it. And I think it was one of the Norwich lads, actually, Morris. Walked past. He just said how we used to walk past that every day and had a right old grin to ourselves. They started the season 16 unbeaten, which is equaling a club record.
So yeah.
Certainly did use those predictions to his advantage. He won't be fazed by any kind of relegation prediction.
Absolutely not. So he's got a bit of history there. Obviously, we get to speak to him for the first time on Tuesday. What for you would do you want to hear on Tuesday? What would make it the perfect first press conference for Paul Hurst?
I want to see a man that's excited to be there, and just a man that just looks excited for the job at hand. I think we've heard about his style. We know about his style, but he'll obviously reinforce that when he speaks next week. But I just want to see a man that's excited and brings a bit of freshness, speaks warmly, glowingly. Things that fans can latch onto. That's what I want to hear from him.
Yeah, and just moving very very briefly, obviously, back to the yellow side of things. What's in terms of, obviously, for Town here, the big issue has been who the manager's going to be, and that's now resolved. Norwich, obviously, not the best season last season.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, in terms of their big kind of off-season talking point, it's Maddison, isn't it? What's going to happen with him?
All day long. Well, he'll go. He's definitely going to go because the financial situation dictates it. Basically, the parachute money has now run out. So they're looking to plug around about a £20 million hole on the balance sheet. It's quite well documented that their owners aren't of the Abramovich-style deep pockets. It has to be self-sustainable now from here on in. And that basically means he's the most sellable asset. And I think the hope is if they can get an auction going, because there's a lot of chatter about this club, that club, whoever, but if they can get a genuine auction going, then they could probably plug that gap, and then that takes care of the finances, and then it moves on to stage two this summer, which is actually upgrading on the squad they've got. And to do that, they're going to then have to move one or two others on. Ideally, there's three or four big wage earners who aren't featuring, more of the veteran stage now, the Russell Martins, Stephen Naismith, Matt Jarvis, completely injury prone, barely played for Norwich, and Michael McGovern, the Northern Ireland keeper. They want to move those four on because that will then free up the wage for them to maybe go and be a bit more creative in the market. But yeah, you're right, basically in a nutshell, get Maddison sold as soon as this summer, and then they'll look to try and refresh the squad. But I think there's a realism that it's going to be another season where, you know, anything between, I mean, they finished 14th in the end, they got hammered at Sheffield Wednesday on the final day, but I think if they were in that bracket again, 10th to 14th, they'd probably settle for that. They wouldn't obviously publicly come out anybody inside the club and say that, but I think that would constitute par for them. Anything above that, they've probably overachieved. And then I think it's this time next summer then, because by that stage, those players I talked about a little bit earlier, if they don't manage to shift them in this window, they will be actually out of contract, and it's almost then you're starting from position zero in terms of the finances. So it's very much more of the same, I think, for next season for Norwich.
You look at Aston Villa now, and it kind of puts into... Norwich started this last summer, didn't they?
They did.
Which is sensible. They've done the sensible thing, whereas Villa have stalled on... They spent last summer, didn't they? They spent 50-odd million last summer.
Frightening, the numbers you see.
Yeah,
they're in trouble, aren't they, Villa?
Yeah.
Big time.
And it's just from a Norwich perspective, I guess there's a lot of, you know, a lot of thanks that this started early. Yeah. They took a measured approach to it rather than gambling on going back straight away.
Absolutely, and that is in the last few days. You can see again we've done bits and pieces trying to canvass opinion, and I think bizarrely that this is now strengthening the hand of the people who've been, let's be a bit steadier about this, let's not try and overspend and bankrupt ourselves. Which can get translated into a lack of ambition, you know, settling for the status quo. But I think a massive reality check and probably shockwaves are going through the Football League now, you know, that a club like Villa almost have pushed themselves to the brink, chasing the dream. But you know, ultimately that's the case. You know, you look at some of the Sheffield Wednesday have spent millions and they're no better off than probably Norwich or Ipswich. You know, you look at Derby, they're going again with Frank Lampard, but there's no guarantees. And I think the more optimistic, certainly Norwich fans that I speak to, what they hope is that, okay, yeah, you're telling me all this about realism and being, you know, limiting your expectations, but you look at Preston, you look at Millwall, they both got in and around it, didn't they? And right to the back end of last season, they were really in with realistic chances of making the top six. So, with all due respect to those clubs, if they can do it, I'm sure Ipswich and Norwich. Mm. If things come together, then it's not beyond the realms that you could still be challenging for the top six.
Absolutely, and obviously this time next year when we have this chat, Ipswich would have been promoted. Norwich would probably be languishing somewhere still, I'd imagine.
I don't think either of those scenarios. Sorry to the listeners.
I think we're going to be talking a similar chat next year, aren't we? But I think that could be a good thing. There's no pressure. Paul Hurst's not coming in here being expected to ignite a promotion challenge. I think that's the thing that excites me the most, really. He's coming in at a time where his main job is to get a fan base excited about their football team again and to feel part of a journey. And to, I guess, it's a results business, so you need to be respectable in that sense. But he's not coming. He doesn't have to strike lightning straight away here. He can build something. And he's got a fan base that are willing to let him do that. And I guess that's why the Ipswich job was so attractive, and we saw so many people apply for it and come in for it.
Absolutely. Chaps, just moving on swiftly, just before we came in here, there was some national football news breaking on the TV behind me. I'm positioned where, in the office where I can't actually see the TV, which is a genius bit of positioning on my behalf. But we're going to get a winter break, Premier League,
yeah. We're not getting
a winter break. It won't affect, though, the EFL.
No.
And there's also been some changes to the wonderfully named Carabao Cup.
Yeah, FA Cup as well. FA Cup, fifth round is now midweek, if Ipswich or Norwich can make that. Ipswich, of course, famously are unaware what the fifth round of the FA Cup is.
Absolutely.
Because we haven't been there for, what?
100 years,
yeah,
something like that.
Long time.
Yeah.
And the Carabao Cup. I quite like the Carabao Cup changes. We'll be talking.
Just say what the changes are.
No seeding in the first rounds, which is good. So Ipswich could play Norwich in round one. That'd be nice. And then no extra time, straight to penalties, and those penalties are normal, not Swedish. Swedish music group.
Swedish band who have reformed.
Yeah,
they have, haven't they?
In a bit to earn some more money.
Very cynical, Paddy.
Didn't make any money out of their penalty brand.
So if a game's tied, no extra time, straight to penalties.
Yep, normal penalties.
That's got to be the way to go, isn't it?
I like it.
Let's be honest, everyone likes a good penalty shootout, don't they? And extra time is kind of dull, let's be honest.
And it's good for newspaper deadlines.
It is.
Which is excellent news.
Very good point.
Said like a true newspaper journalist. And of course, we've also got to talk about a little thing happening starting next week, called the World Cup, which kicks off on Thursday, I think, with the sexiest World Cup kickoff game of all time, Russia against Saudi Arabia. Set your clocks now for that. Are we excited about the World Cup, boys? As football journalists, are you interested in the World Cup, or is it a bit of a busman's kind of thing for you? Or
I can't. Yeah, it might be an age thing now, but I think I've been let down too many times by the Three Lions. So South Africa was the final straw for me, I think. Obviously I'll be watching, wishing them all the best, but I think a little bit like we've been speaking a bit earlier about the realism around both clubs in this part of the world. I think there is generally a realism with this England group that, you know, get out of the group and maybe win a knockout and get to the quarterfinals. I think that would constitute progress. And then it's obviously all about building again to the next tournament. But, you know, I thought they were impressive in stages in the last two friendly games, but I wouldn't place too much store by then. I just think, yeah, you just, as Andy touched on there with Paul Hurst coming in, as a fan, you just want a team to go out and attack it and have a good go and play some attractive football. And if you get that, then you hopefully will get one or two decent results along the way. But Yeah, but as I say, this is England, so I think they'll probably end up not coming out of the group.
That'd be a disaster, wouldn't it?
Are there any Norwich players at the World Cup?
he says no in the answer to that.
Yes and no. None in the playing sense, but the Danish manager used to play for Norwich, so I think you could claim him loosely as
tenuous. There's a tenuous Claxton.
That's about.
Tan have got two there, of course. Yeah, two. Bielkowski and Jonas. Yeah. Andy, are you going to be watching?
I'll probably my World Cup excitement. It normally takes me a few days into the tournament to kind of be interested, but yeah, I'll probably watch, especially the opener.
What could be better than that? Yeah, sitting down on Thursday to watch that. Chaps, any other business? We've obviously had a little chat here. Anything else to get off your chest? Have you got a little moan you want to go on, Andy? I know you sometimes can be quite moaning.
What is so good about Back to the Future?
Have we got 45 minutes?
We'll save that for the Back to the Future podcast.
Yeah. What's so good about Back to the Future? Oh, it's got everything.
I've not made a conscious decision not to watch it. Yeah. It just hasn't happened.
If you're listening to this now, and I'm sure you're appalled by what Andy's saying, please hit him on Twitter, Andy Warren on Twitter. Let him know exactly how good Back to the Future is. Send him GIFs, memes, all sorts. Bombard him with Back to the Future praise. Because, as I say, Paddy, there's not a finer film, is it?
No. I mean, when I saw your mug on your desk, I was very jealous.
Yeah.
Now you've told me you're an actual super fan. Well, you actually told me about the live. Maybe let the listeners know about the live experience.
The Secret Cinema, yeah. I don't know. Again, this is probably something that I'm hoping you've probably heard of. But Secret Cinema are a bunch of guys who put on immersive cinema experiences. That sounds incredibly nerdy, doesn't it? But essentially they take a film and they build a world around it. So back in 2014, I think it was, I found myself at the Olympic Park with a mini hill valley created around me. Wow. We're all given identities. They had actors playing the key roles. So we spent the day there having a jolly good old time. And then we all sat down at the end of the day to watch the film on the famous clock tower. They put a huge screen on the clock tower.
You didn't tell me that. You actually watched it on the clock
absolutely.
Tower.
Absolutely. So they had a big clock tower they'd made up, like Hill Valley Clock Tower. Screen, massive screen, sort of size of screen you'd find in Mike Bacon's living room, TV-wise. And we got to watch the film, and then they actually had bits from the film being played out around us as well. It was tremendous. And I understand they do two or three different films a year. I know they did Shawshank Redemption.
I've seen that.
You've seen the film. You have seen the film, good, because that's most people's top five of all time, isn't it?
Yeah.
But absolutely, and they keep talking about having a Back to the Future 2. They keep teasing this. And now the obvious time to do that would have been 2015, wouldn't it?
Would have, yeah.
Because obviously, as you know, Andy, that's when they go to in the future, obviously, 2015. Yeah. But it never happened.
That's the future, is it?
Bear in mind that was made in 1986, 7, 8, 9, something like that. Yeah. And obviously the 2015 world that they predicted is disappointingly
the hoverboards they got that didn't they, but not the actual cars that drive in the sky. We didn't quite get there.
That's surely on the way. Paddy, turning to you, my friend.
Yes.
What have you got coming up? I should say, actually, you're getting married soon, aren't you?
I am, yeah. Any gifts gratefully received care of, whatever the address of this building is.
Absolutely, we'll get them to him. Send them on.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be very nice.
How's the old wedding planning going?
Yes. A bit fatigued with it all now, mate, to be brutally honest. You know, you've already been through that.
How big a role have you played in the planning?
Huge, mate, huge. I've stepped way back now. It's the intended and her mother, my mother-in-law to be. I've basically just been told to turn up at this point at this time, and the rest will be taken care of. So I'm sure it'll be all worth it, the effort, I'm sure.
Yeah.
put that caveat in case she ends up listening to this.
Is she going to listen to this?
I've not got anything to do with it. It's just a world of different types of card for invites and which flowers and caterers. It's everything I've dreamed of and more.
So you're looking forward to it? It's fair
to say. Can't wait. Counting the hours and then it'll be over. The planning, not the wedding. Not the actual what it means, what it signifies, the religious union of marriage. But the actual planning. Although we are then apparently been told the next project is buying a house. So I don't think I'm going to get too many downtime.
No respite. No rest for the wicked.
So yes.
We're both married men, obviously, Andy. Best day of your life, isn't it, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I've got a little girl now.
Ah,
so I don't know if I is that allowed. That the best day
is that allowed to
now?
Supersede? I don't know.
What about
the day that Tan got promoted?
That's a long time ago now.
That's got to be up there, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
to be honest,
best day of my teenage life.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I guess in terms of mailbag this week, unfortunately, this is kind of a rushed podcast. So I've just been checking while I've been here. I could only get a Twitter moment out a few moments before we came in here. I can't actually see any questions coming in, so we might have to skip mailbag for this week. That's no bad thing. And obviously, as I say, next Tuesday we hear from the man himself, yeah. Paul Hurst, for the first time. Andy Warren, Stuart Watson will be back. He's on another holiday at the moment. Unbelievable lack of commitment from that lad.
He's got another one coming up. I can't really talk.
No,
about
it. No.
I've got two coming up as well.
Anyone would think you've got a small period in which to get your cram your holidays in as football writers. So as I say, next week Tuesday we'll hope to do another podcast special. We don't actually know what time Paul Hurst is going to be speaking though, do we? Which might impact on that. So, but hopefully you'll be able to join us again next week and hear what Paul has got to say. We'll have a little chat about it then. But for now, all that remains for me to say is thanks very much to Andy Warren.
Thank you.
And thanks very much to Paddy Davitt for joining us as a special guest today. I'm sure you might be hearing Paddy again as we approach the big derby days next season. But thanks, Paddy, for your time.
Thank you. Enjoy.
And I've been Mark Heath, and we'll speak to you again soon.